Welcome to the Sunflower Conversations, where we explore the hidden disability sunflower and its role in supporting people with hidden disabilities.
Hello, I'm Chantal, and joining me today is Tom Ryan Elliott. Thank you for coming along to join me today. Tom, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, Chantal. I'm Tom Ryan Elliott, and it's great to meet you. I'm 30 years old, and it's quite scary. I'm about to reach 31, so I'm getting quite old, I'm afraid.
Some people would say that 31 is still quite young, Tom, depending on who you're talking to.
Yeah.
And what are your interests, Tom? What do you enjoy doing?
Well, actually, over the last, I'd say, 5 years, I've been studying photography, so that's my main passion. While I'm talking to you now, if I wasn't, I'd be out and about exploring around London and taking pictures and videos all around. So as soon as we end, I'll be out and about. The only time I'm usually home is editing.
That's a really nice way to spend your time. I know that with the pandemic, lots of people, including myself, you couldn't do anything apart from have your daily walk of exercise, where sort of reconnecting with nature and looking at things that they hadn't seen before and snapping them on their phones and sharing them on their Instagram. And there's a thing, isn't there, you can look at the same thing several times, and each time you look at it, it will present something different.
Yes, when we were stuck at home, it was quite hard because I'd never done it beforehand, taking pictures inside, and it's surprising how much you can get in your own even bedroom. And I guess it's what some photographers do, even with a cup of coffee or something like that, how many great pictures you can get.
What are your health conditions, Tom, and how long have you had them?
So in terms of my health conditions, it started all the way back in 2014. I went out on a trip out to San Francisco with some of my good friends, and that was fantastic. But then after then, that's where I really do not remember a thing, because we flew over to Las Vegas, but as said, I do not remember anything. I've seen pictures of us in Las Vegas, but apparently I fell down 51 steps of stairs, 51 steps on a set of stairs, and cracked a large section of my skull, which caused me to have a cranioplasty, which is a large section of my skull on the front left-hand side. And I spent about 4 months in hospital in Las Vegas, and my parents were flown over out to Las Vegas with the fear that I was going to die. Luckily, I was flown back and then have essentially spent, I visited almost all hospitals in London. I've written down a list of all the hospitals, and I think it is my aim to meet them all.
That is a horrific story, if you don't mind me saying. You know, you've gone out there with friends, having a great time, and then for something like that, I mean, was it just a slip? Did you just slip or trip? Did you find out what caused the accident to happen?
Apparently, there was a video. But as I said, I never want to see it because I don't remember. If I see it, it would make it even worse.
Yeah.
There probably is an option to see it, but I don't even want to see it because I think it would make it even worse. So I do not want to see it.
I can understand that. So you were in a coma, right?
Yes. So I was in a coma, I think, 4 months. And then the first thing I remember, I was flown back, and the first hospital that I came back to was in London. It was Charing Cross, and I was there for a couple of months, and obviously I had half of my skull was removed. Apparently, my parents told me I did wake up then, and I could speak a little bit, but as I said, I do not remember. The first thing I remember was when I was taken over to Kingston Hospital, and remember talking from the brain injury. I've also both epilepsy and aphasia.
Can you tell me a bit about your epilepsy and aphasia? Like, how do they affect you?
Well, to be honest, both of them, when I was in hospital, I didn't know anything because the doctors and the nurses handled it all. And they gave me the medications that I needed. And you're fully controlled within the hospital. Essentially, you can't move. You don't really do anything. You're in bed most of the time. Then as soon as I left hospital, the first thing I remember was I went out with my sister and her boyfriend. Fancy place, we went to Wagamama.
Yeah, classic.
Near Waterloo. And all of a sudden, it was known as a simple focal seizure. And that's essentially where, in terms of seizures, that's where you just cannot talk. It's not a tonic-clonic seizure where you fall on the floor and twitch and can't move or anything. It's just simply where you can't talk. And everyone was worried. And because it was my first ever seizure, the ambulance had to be called.
Can I ask, are you conscious the whole time? Like, is it like you're locked in? So you know what you want to do, but it's just not happening? Or do you forget what's happened?
With a simple focal seizure, you know what you want to say, you just can't get it out. You can see everything around you. You know what, you can see people looking at you. You can see they're worried. You just want to reply to them and say either it's fine or don't worry. You just can't open your mouth and say it, which is worse because it makes you frustrated.
If you are feeling stressed in that situation, in that you can see people are looking at you and they're really worried and you can't let them know that you're okay and you will be okay, does that intensify it? Does it make it last for longer, or does it not work like that?
Some of the doctors said it's the best to just try and stay as calm as you can. And even some of them say that it's best when that happens, just if you're at home, sit down, even just lie in bed as if you're going to go asleep, because if you do get stressed, it could lead up to what's known as a tonic-clonic, which is where you can, I don't know how to say it apart from pass out almost, and that's where you personally do not have a clue what's going on.
You are listening to the Sunflower Conversations with Chantal. To learn more about the Sunflower, visit our website. Details are in the show notes. Did you mention that you have aphasia as well?
Yes, so aphasia is what you might be able to, you personally seeing and anyone else hearing me, will be able to notice, because that's where my speech and language isn't what it should be. Because in my head, I know exactly what I want to say, but I just can't get it out exactly how I want to say it. And exactly that, I can't get it out as professionally. Yeah, exactly that. It's, again, it's frustrating. But aphasia also affects my reading and writing.
What effect does it have?
I can read just sentences, but if it's a long book or something like that, I read like the first few lines and then almost it's like, oh, I can't be bothered to go on further, which makes me seem like I'm really lazy. But that's why I use tools such as, there's loads of different tools, such as Grammarly I use a lot. And when I'm writing, I use that to double check my writing. Because if I write things really quickly, when I'm reading it, it seems like they're fine, but when other people see them, they'll notice that I've missed words. So I always slow myself down and ensure that I just double check what I've written before I send it to people.
That's like a web-based tool.
Yeah, I use, there's multiple different tools. There's Grammarly, Google Translate. Sometimes for the news, I read a website called unitedresponse.org.uk, which makes news a lot shorter. Rather than a whole page of news, it just makes it a small paragraph.
That's really useful, actually, isn't it? You can end up not knowing what's going on if it's too overwhelming, overpowering, difficult to digest and understand. So it's making news accessible for everyone. So with regards to your epilepsy, the first time you experienced it was when you went out with your sister, and the aphasia, did that happen straight away, or again was that something that you realized after a little bit of time?
It started straight away, but personally I just thought everything was fine. I met friends, I met my parents, and I thought my speech was fine. Unfortunately, it isn't the case. You know, if for example you broke your leg and you're in hospital, as soon as that's fixed, you step out, you're fine. It doesn't seem to be the case with brain injuries, which is a shame, and goes on for life. I'd say it's taken me about 6 years now, and I'm slowly getting there to a stage where I can actually have a discussion with someone. Yeah, whereas about 3 years ago, I wouldn't be able to do this at all.
Is remarkable then, and basically you've had to rehabilitate yourself. And do you take medication for your condition, Tom?
Yeah, not for aphasia, but for epilepsy I do.
Do you get side effects from the drugs?
Very much so. There are things like, even obviously with having aphasia, the different medications do affect your speech, and they can make you sleepy. But it's something I think personally you don't notice, because you're taking the medication, it's a personal thing. It's other people that you're talking to notice that you seem very different.
Mm. What's a typical day like for you in regards to your health?
I'd say at the moment, due to aphasia, it's quite lonely. Because the speech and language disability, speaking to other people is quite difficult. Online is very easy because I have the time to prepare before replying to other people. But if people speak quite quickly, it's very hard to reply. And that's why I'm enjoying my photography, because it's something that I can do personally. But I would like to get more involved in other groups, and that's why hopefully, you know, when we can get out and about more, I join teams like Meetup and other groups like that, because even if it is just an evening, I can go out and go out with other photographers.
I've met people before that work with people that have a stutter. Yeah. And I think if you don't have a stutter, sometimes when people are talking to you and they have one, there can be the impulse to try and finish that person's sentence for them. Mm-hmm. How does that feel, and do people do that to you, and how does it make you feel?
It is frustrating, because it's just in your head. I'm not an idiot, you know, I know exactly what I want to say, and what you're replying or trying to respond to me just sounds like such a simple thing. I enjoy going to a group called Aphasia Reconnect, because then at least you're seeing other people who have aphasia, because, you know, at least they have almost the same condition that you do. So you can take the same amount of time, which is great, because, but at the end of the day, I don't want to be stuck with other people who have aphasia, because that just almost ties me down, and I'm never going to get out of that position. I'm never going to move higher than where I am at the moment. You know, if I just stay there, I'm stuck. You know, you're never going to get a job if, oh yeah, I'm stuck in Aphasia Reconnect. I'm never going to find a job if I'm stuck in that position, you know.
Can we just talk a little bit about what your life was like pre-trauma? So you had a job. Was a sales job where you've got to be on the ball, reacting to things quickly. you know, every minute's a sale lost kind of.
Yeah, I guess one of the things I did used to do, but obviously with epilepsy I can't, which is a bit of a shame because I did love driving. With epilepsy you can't drive, which is frustrating, but I guess the benefit of epilepsy is you do get a freedom pass, which, as I live in London, I can travel everywhere. So if anyone else who is listening also have epilepsy and loves photography, I can travel around everywhere for free. So it's amazing. If I want to take a picture, even though I live in West London, but want to take pictures out in East London, I can travel over there for free. It's amazing.
Having the freedom pass, you've got your independence, haven't you?
When I first started and came out of St George's, which was one of my last hospitals, I didn't know you could get a freedom pass.
It's good, and it means you can get out and do the things that you enjoy. And how about relationships? How have they been affected? I think you said that initially the people around you who love and care for you were able to recognise the aphasia, but you hadn't seen it. So I'm feeling like there was a nurturing environment happening.
When I first started, because I didn't know what it was, the family had to almost fake my responses and just nod that I was saying the right thing back to them, because I was just apparently making no sense. You make all your friends at work. So I've lost all of those, and just being stuck at home, you lose all your friends. So that is one of the downsides of having a disability. You lose all your friends. So yeah, I suppose that is something that does suck with having a disability. One of the benefits of having a disability is the fact that you can go back into college, and you can get the benefits of going back into college for free. I decided to go back into college and study photography.
You are listening to the Sunflower Conversations with Chantal. To share your story, details are in the show notes. What's harder to live with, aphasia or epilepsy?
I'd say aphasia, because my speaking, reading and writing is not as good as I would like it to be. I'm still glad that it is okay, because we're still having this discussion. A lot of people who have aphasia can't even talk, but it's still not at the level where I want to be, where companies actually accept me and want me to be at work.
Do you wear the sunflower, and what do you wear, and why do you wear it?
It depends. I either wear it around my neck or I wear it from my pocket. If it's really busy, I wear it around my neck to ensure I'm going to have a seat if I think I'm going to have a seizure. Because I find if you have epilepsy, if you don't wear it, people just will either not let you have a seat, or if you do have a seat, people straight away, if, for example, if someone is older or if someone has if someone has a walking stick, but other than that they're fine, simply have a walking stick, straight away, no, people are rude. They will simply say, get out. And yeah, I think if you have that around your neck, people straight away will be like, they won't say anything, they'll see that you have a disability. If you don't have it, they are rude.
You know, the whole premise of the sunflower is, if you see somebody wearing it, be kind. It's not difficult. Be kind, be understanding, be patient, show a little bit of care. So for what you've told me, I feel like you get that when you're wearing it.
Yes, because people are very rude. So it is best, if you have a disability and need to have a seat, then definitely do wear it.
Would you recommend the sunflower to some to other people?
Yeah, very much so. If you're at the till and you're taking time, people behind you are so rude, and they'll be like, hurry up, hurry up. And if you wear it around your neck, they will realise that you're taking some time, because you have a disability.
Do you think the sunflower is needed in society?
Yes, very much so.
Look into the future. You're a keen photographer. You know, what's your hopes for the future? And you mentioned something to me when we were talking before about volunteering.
Yes, so at the moment, I'm volunteering for the Transport for London Museum. I also help in RNIB as well.
What do you do with the RNIB?
I help just simply on the desk because my granddad had was leading towards being blind, so I wanted to study a bit more towards that, so just to help him.
We've spoken quite a bit about, you know, your desire to be employed. With your experience of, like, you know, life pre-injury, working, busy work life, etc., and your situation now, do you see ways in which employers can adapt to help people such as yourself?
Yes, I'm hoping so, that in the future, more companies will start to understand this. As I said previously, that more companies, well, obviously 500 being the Valuable 500, are starting to learn more about it, that they'll adapt to start with disability and just take the time to understand. And as I mentioned earlier, that there's a lot of software to help their staff adapt to what's needed. You know, with myself, speech and language, reading and writing, you know, I've got it all. But rather than, you know, saying to the staff, you know, get it done in 15 minutes or something like that, if you give me the task, I will get it done. And almost 100%, I will get it done better because I use all this software to ensure it's right, because I double check, back check, and do everything, because I know if I do it quickly I will get it wrong. That's why I check everything I do to make sure it's right. So I think it's these companies just need to look back and just not straight away think, oh, someone who has a disability should not be hired.
Do you have any advice for anyone that has received a brain trauma resulting in epilepsy or aphasia?
There are many different options that can help you should you need it, and I would highly recommend you using them if needed. For those of you who had a brain injury, Headway is a great organisation that has many different local groups across the whole country. Headway is an organisation that helps you do things, actually very simple things that when you first start up hospital, you never really think about. Things that such as I mentioned beforehand, Freedom Pass, PIP. If you're always taking the train, the Freedom Pass, Disabled Persons Rail Card. Also, Aphasia Reconnect, if you have aphasia, is a great group to meet other people with aphasia, just to ensure you meet other people with aphasia and learn what is possible, such as reading, writing, and other things such as that, to make sure you keep practicing rather than just letting it go. And as I said beforehand, no matter what, never give up.
Tom, you are an inspiring individual, and I'm so glad that you have decided to share your story with our listeners. You have never given up. You are fully focused on returning to work and, you know, and that's starting with your volunteering. If you feel that you have any of the health conditions discussed in today's podcast, please contact your GP. Any of the support charities that Tom spoke about in today's podcast, Sunflower Story video, will be in the show notes.
If you'd like to share your sunflower story or conversation, please email conversations@hiddendisabilitiesstore.com. Find out more about us or listen to this recording again by checking out our insights page at hiddendisabilitiesstore.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Please help, have patience, and show kindness to others, and join us again soon. Making the Invisible Visible with the Hidden Disability Sunflower.